Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Starting from text 32. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Devanam gunalinganam anushravika karmanam sattva evaika manaso vitik svabhaviki tuya animitta bhagavati Bhakti Siddhir Gariyasi. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Kapila said, the senses are symbolic representations of the demigods, and their natural inclination is to work under the direction of the Vedic injunctions. As the senses are representatives of the demigods, so the mind is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mind's natural duty is to serve. When that service spirit is engaged in devotional service to the Personality of Godhead, without any motive, that is far better even than salvation. So this is the natural progression of Vedanta understanding. First of all, sambandha again. Sambandha means relationship. Just as the Vedanta Shastra is also called Sharirika. Sharira means body. The scripture about the body. What body? Everything is the body of God. This is the metaphor presented by Ramanujacharya. Everything that exists, spiritual energy, material energy, comprises the body of God, including the living entities. So the Vedanta, first of all, talks about the relationship between God and his body, how God is the soul, super soul, supreme soul, and everything is his body. So the relationship, sambandha, is in particular the relationship between God, the Supreme, and his many different kinds of energies. That has been presented in the previous verses, sambandha again. Understanding who is God and who are the devotees. And a basic idea of the nature of the relationship between them. That it is a loving relationship. The word bhakti has been presented. That is sambandha again. Basic understanding of who's who and what's the relationship between them. But the next phase of Vedanta realization is the question of, well, what do we do about it? How do we actually functionally engage in this relationship? Practically, what is to be done? This is the topic known as abhideya, which the technical meaning in this context is the activity that is recommended in order to realize the soul's relationship with God. That is knowledge of how do you go about practicing to revive your natural loving relationship with God. What can we do while in our conditioned state? So this is described in this and the next verses. Functionally, what does bhakti consist of? So this verse is a little cryptic. And it would be hard to understand it just looking at a dictionary.
We have to look at the commentaries by the Vaishnava Acharyas to understand exactly what is meant here. Srila Prabhupada has studied those commentaries, Sridhar Swami's commentary, Srila Jiva Goswami's commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, and presented us their conclusions, their opinions in his translation and purport. First of all, in the translation. The verse talks about devas who are gunalinga. What is that supposed to mean? Deva usually is understood as gods, demigods. And linga can mean anything. It can mean Shiva linga. It can mean a logical piece of evidence. It can mean a number of things. Symptom, sign. And guna, quality, but what kind of quality? So the Vaishnavacharyas clear this up for us. The devas here are actually the senses. The senses and also the demigods who preside over those senses. Gunalinga means, guna here means the material modes or the sense gratification found within the material modes. Sense objects. And linga means knowledge here, perception. So the senses are the instruments, the faculties, which perceive the objects of the material world. Of course, there are two kinds of senses. Some senses are input senses, and some are output senses. In other words, some receive knowledge, receive information. Things don't actually enter the senses. We see the sun. It's not that the sun or a lamp literally enters our eye. Just some rays of light reflected off the sun or off the fire enter our eye. And other senses, the objects don't actually enter the senses. Simply there's some atomic fraction of matter that enters, or some wave function or something. That is knowledge receiving senses, like the eyes, the ears, the nose. And then the other category of senses are the active senses, the ones that reach back out to the external world. And the action of those senses involve actual movement outward and physical contact. The hands, the genitals, the legs, the tongue used for speaking. These are active senses. But they're both categories can be described as gunalinga. They involve perception of the external objects of the world. Anushravaka karmanam. We can talk about the senses in their material condition, which is out of order, disordered, diseased. Medicine means studying the different diseases of man. A doctor has to know disease, but he also has to know what is a healthy condition. His business is to convert disease into health. And if he's very expert, and his patients cooperate with him, he can even prevent disease by keeping them in a healthy condition. So here, the senses in their perverted state do all sorts of strange things. But what's the natural, proper function of the senses when they're not in a diseased condition? That is described in the second line. Anushravaka karmanam. They are active, and what impels their action. Their action is anushravaka. It is faithfully pursuing the Vedic instruction. Just like, what does an actor do? Well, a good actor speaks the words in the script, first of all. Otherwise, he's not performing the play. He's improvising. That's something else. But an actor who's supposed to be performing a play, first of all, he should speak the words. Then he can speak them very expertly and artistically and very emotionally. But first of all, let him know the script and speak it and not just make up some nonsense. So the senses that are acting properly in their proper function follow the dictates of the Vedic injunctions. Behave properly, and how they should behave properly, that is dictated in the Vedas. When we buy a machine, we receive a handbook, how to operate a VCR. So VCR is very complicated. You have to program it to record the program when you're not at home. You have to know what buttons to push. So you read the, if you're not foolish, you read the manual. The manual for using the human body is the Vedic instruction. Animals are not expected to be able to understand the Vedas, and they're in an ignorant condition. Their senses don't function naturally. They have to function by instinct. Their hormones and their genetic coding give them instinctual urges to do the right things. Hunger, sex desire, fear in the presence of enemies. Animals respond to these naturally by instinct. But human beings cannot function according to, cannot fulfill their potential by just living according to instinct. That's animal life. For a human being to use his mind, body, and senses properly, he has to follow the handbook, the Vedic instructions. So senses in proper working order, at least in the human body, which has the potential to realize real natural life. Only the human body, as opposed to animal bodies, can realize this. Only in the human form of life can we come to this stage of our bodily and mental faculties functioning properly according to the Vedic instructions. That's part of the definition, or the description of what the function of devotion is. In other words, you have to first of all be a civilized human being. Then you can, as preparation, as preliminary, then you can think about entering into devotional service. Just like if you want to take a graduate course, you have to have the bachelor degree first. So the undergraduate prerequisite is to follow the Vedic instructions, to be a civilized human being. Then the graduate course is the course of devotional service. Sattva evaika manaso. Sattva is another word which can have many meanings. Existence, the mode of goodness, reality. Here it means the supreme, according to the commentaries of our Vaishnavacharyas. Sattva is the locative case, focused on the supreme truth. Locative means location, but it can be physical location. It can also mean a figurative location or subject matter, yeah. But here it's not Vishaya Saptami here. It's not a literal physical location, but the idea of being focused on something. Your attention is focused on something. What's focused? The attention of the mind. Eva eka manaso. When a person has his mind exclusively focused on the Supreme, and his senses are acting naturally in their natural, proper function according to the Vedic injunctions, then being in proper working order, what they do naturally, vritik swa bhaviki tuya, what the senses which have been restored to a healthy condition will naturally do is engage in bhakti. Animita bhagavati bhakti. There's no selfish motive involved. It's not being forced by any material urge of hunger or desire for power or for sense gratification. It's simply the natural urge of the senses. Just like a child wants to play. He doesn't have to. He can sit and do nothing. He doesn't have to go out and work. He's a young child. He doesn't even have to go to school. But he wants to play. The Supreme Lord doesn't have to go to work. He doesn't have to go to school. He wants to play. And the senses, which are in their proper spiritual condition, they want to engage in devotional service. Svabhaviki. Nothing's making them do that. It's what they want to do. When they're free from all external forces, when they're free to do what they want. Animita Bhagavati, causeless and focused, directed toward the personality of Godhead. Animita Bhagavati Vritti Bhaktihi, and that is called bhakti, devotion. Devotion is the most natural thing. This is self-realization. Realize who you really are and do what comes naturally to you when you're in a healthy condition. What is that? The natural function of the living entity is bhakti, devotion to the Supreme Lord. You can say that self-realization is liberation, but Kapiladev, the Supreme himself, says here, bhakti, siddhir, gariyasi. Bhakti is better than liberation. Unequivocal affirmation that bhakti is superior. Okay, we'll go on to the next verse. Short verse, half of a shloka. Jarayatyashuya kosham nigirnam analoyata. Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. Of course, that, again, assumes a healthy condition. If you eat improperly, then you get indigestion, and the fire will not function properly, and you won't automatically digest everything you eat. But a healthy man does. He has a strong fire in his stomach. And he doesn't have to program his stomach after the meal or meditate on eating, on digesting. Agni Vaishvanara, the Lord of Fire, residing in every man's stomach, takes care of this business of digestion without any thought about it. We don't have to think about it. We don't think about how our heart should beat. It's an automatic function, controlled by the lower brain, the brainstem. Breathing also. We don't have to think about breathing. And digestion also occurs naturally. We don't know, we don't consciously tell the bile to secrete. It does. It happens automatically if we're healthy. So in the same way, without any endeavor on our part, our digestion occurs. Similarly, there's a process of transcendental digestion. We've got this gross body. Well, you can get rid of that by killing yourself, commit suicide. But that's not recommended. Because the gross body is simply the outer covering. We have another covering inside that. You know, take an airplane from Sweden to South Africa. It's winter in Sweden and it's summer in South Africa. So you get off the plane, and it was below freezing in freezing weather when you left Sweden. When you get to South Africa, it's sweltering hot. So take off your coat, and you're still sweating because you're also wearing a sweater. Take off the sweater also. Then you might be comfortable. So you have the gross body. You can rid yourself of that. That happens simply by dying. And we're always dying. We're in Martya Loka, the place where everybody's dying all the time, like flies that live for a few hours. We live for a few decades, but it's really not much time. From the point of view of people living on the heavenly planets, we're dying all the time. And that's all we do around here is die. Down here on Martyrloka. But that doesn't solve the problem, just dying. That removes the coat, but you're still wearing a sweater. You've got an inner covering of your linga sharira, which is not easy to remove. You can remove this, you periodically remove your outer covering by dying anyway. That, you know, just wait around a few years, you'll die, no problem. Or if you're really in a rush, you can kill yourself. Either commit suicide or live foolishly and you can die soon. But how do you get rid of the subtle covering? It doesn't come off. You can kill yourself 100 times and the same subtle body is dragging itself around with you. You can't get rid of it. It is your subtle, this linga sharira is your mind, your intelligence, and your ego. And you take them from one gross body to another. The only way you can get rid of them is to attain liberation. Liberation is identical. It's by definition the removal of the subtle body. And when the subtle body is dissolved, you don't have to take a material birth again. You've attained actual liberation from samsara, the cycle of birth and death. How do you do that? The impersonalists are struggling. Klesho dikataras tesham avyakta sakta chetasam avyakta gatir dukam dehavad birdavapyate. Those who are aiming at the unmanifest feature of the Supreme, the impersonal, Brahman, they're aiming for liberation and they're having a very hard time of it. Klesho adikataras, great distress, trouble that they experience in trying to arrange for the dissolution, the dissolving of their subtle bodies. They work hard for many lifetimes and they still don't achieve it. Yogis and gyanis. Jarayat yashaya kosham. But this subtle body is very easily digested, dissolved, by the execution of the devotional service as described in the previous verse. Automatic. You don't even have to think about it. It's like eating a meal and your stomach takes care of the digestion. Spontaneously. Just perform devotional service. Liberation, the dissolving of your subtle body, will happen as an automatic byproduct. Okay, we'll go on to the next verse.
Naikatmakame spriyanti kechin matpada seva birata mariha yenyonyato bhagavata prasajya sabhajayante mama paurushani.
Now we're getting into the actual practice of devotional service, abhideya gyan, knowledge of the actual process. And some hints at the third stage of Vedanta realization, prayojana tattva, the actual perfection that can be realized. Although it's not described in detail, there are very strong hints of it here. Translation of the verse. A pure devotee who is attached to the activities of devotional service and who always engages in the service of my lotus feet, never desires to become one with me. Such a devotee who is unflinchingly engaged always glorifies my pastimes and activities. Ekatmatam. Ekatmatam. To become one and the same. Devotees don't want this. They don't want to become one with the Supreme. They want reciprocation. Bhakti means sharing. You cannot share something with yourself. If you're the only person, you can't. There's no question of sharing. And what devotees want is bhakti, to share a loving exchange of rasa, of ecstatic reciprocation. Jayashi Gaur Nitai, Baladev Subhadra, Sri Jagannath, left him out. Sorry. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. Devotees are not interested in becoming one with the Supreme. It's inferior. Prabhupada put it in his words in a lecture in Honolulu, Hawaii. I was there in 1976. He said, the impersonalists, they want to become one with God. Why are they satisfied with that? You can do better than become one with God. You can have God in your grasp. You can control God by love. You can become better than God, in other words. So devotees don't want this lesser thing of pretending to be one. How can you reciprocate when there's no individuality? Devotees don't want it. Naspihanti. But pad kachin. There may be some people who, even some mixed devotees who are still striving for some merging. But it's contradictory, contrary. Devotees who understand properly don't want that impersonal merging. Matpada sevabhirata, because they're very much attracted to the service of my lotus feet. Lord Kapiladeva is talking about himself, the Supreme Lord. Mariha, and they have experienced what it means to work for Krishna, to serve Krishna. They're not just theoreticians. They've experienced the actual pleasure of devotional service to the Lord. They're attracted to the Lord, and they have tasted what it is like to do service for Krishna, the pleasure experienced. Therefore, they don't want this liberation of merging. There are different kinds of liberation. These are the perfections that are achieved in liberation. Five of them. This one mentioned here of Ekatmaka or Kaivalyam, Sayujya is another name for it. Merging your identity, dissolving your identity into that of the Supreme, is not ever accepted by the Vaishnavas, by the devotees of the Lord. It is rejected. But the devotees who attain to the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha, also achieve other perfections. The perfection of living on the same planet of the Lord as the Lord, Salokya. Going to Vaikuntha means to be a privilege to live in the same place, same planet as the Lord. But if you're living on the same planet with someone, you still may not ever see him. You know, there are people in Mongolia, I never saw them. They're on the same planet. So better than that is Samipya, to be in face-to-face proximity with a person. So that is the second perfection. To actually be allowed to enter into the Lord's personal company. And then you can gain the other two. Sarshti, Sarishti, to have equal opulence and power as the Lord. It's not that he has to keep you powerless in order to maintain his supremacy. He can give you the same powers. He's not threatened by sharing his power. He's still the Supreme, even if he gives you, you know, as much as his opulence as you can handle. He can give you free access to his opulence, and still he's the Supreme. So he shares this sarshti with his devotees, especially in Vaikuntha. The devotees in Vaikuntha can do whatever they want. They can create their own universe and control it. They can act and go as they want and go wherever they want. But they're still devotees, and the Supreme Lord is still the Supreme. And then the last perfection in Vaikuntha is sarupyam, to have a bodily form that looks just like God's. Generally, the devotees in Vaikuntha, they have four-handed bodies that look practically indistinguishable from Lord Narayan's body. And the ladies there look just like the goddess of fortune. Of course, we, you know, We have a daughter, we call her Lakshmi, and we imagine that she's like the goddess of fortune. Or a lady's getting married, the bride and groom, we compare them to Lakshmi Narayan, but that's just figurative. In Vaikuntha, the ladies actually look just like the goddess of fortune. And the men all look like Narayan. You can only tell the real Narayan because he has the Srivatsa and the Kaustubha gem. Nobody else wears those two signs. Otherwise, everybody looks just like Narayan. He doesn't care. He doesn't have to look different than everybody else to be God. He's glad to share even his own form with his devotees. So, these opulences are accepted by the devotees reluctantly. They don't want power and perfections like this, but the Lord gives them to them, even though they don't want them. They accept. For the Lord's service, these things can be accepted. But these devotees don't want to merge their personal existence into the existence of God. They don't want to become one. Yen yonyato bhagavata prasajya sabhajayante mama paurushani. The devotees don't like to be separate. They like to maintain their individuality. They can then come together in congregation and reciprocate among each other in glorifying the Supreme. Bhagavata prasajya. They come together, just like we have come together here. We're discussing the glories of Krishna. This is what devotees like to do. Sabhajayante mama paurushani. They glorify the wonderful feats, the wonderful deeds executed by the Supreme Lord and the pastimes that he enjoys. We'll go on to the next verse. 35. Did I skip one? Okay, 35. Pashyanti te me ruchiran amba santa prasanna vaktraruna lochanani rupani divyani varapradani sakam vacham spihaniyam vadanti. O my mother, my devotees always see the smiling face of my form with eyes like the shining, like the rising morning sun. They like to see my various transcendental forms, which are all benevolent. And they always talk, they also talk favorably with me. Even the neophyte devotees are very attracted to come and see the Lord in his murti in the temple. Every pious person, at least in Indian culture, is attracted to come to visit the temple, to see to get the darshan of the deity. You don't have to be an extremely advanced mystic to have that attraction. And so even a common person can appreciate and enjoy the beauty of the Lord in his deity form. This is the Lord's mercy. He extends himself. He expands himself even into a form that conditioned souls can see. This is his Archa Murti, the Archa Avatar, the incarnation as the deity, the Murti. It is the Lord, but it's a special incarnation in apparently material form, stone, metal. There are 9 kinds of archas. Murtis. You can have a murti made of sand. You can have a murti made of jewels, of wood, of metal, of stone. Even mental murti is also an incarnation of the Lord, even created in your mind. So anyone who has some attraction to the Lord can experience his beauty, even if he hasn't attained the divine eyes or the rare privilege to see the Lord in person, to witness his actual pastimes. That's rare. Even perfected souls don't always get that vision. Many devotees spend, the rest, they decide to go to Vrindavan to spend the rest of their lives there and wander about Vrindavan, hoping that they can get the darshan of Krishna. And even if they're qualified, even if they deserve to see Krishna, sometimes Krishna doesn't show himself, or often he does not, because he wants the devotee to become more and more intensely attracted and more eager, anxious to see him. So he doesn't show himself. Even for the rest of that life, the devotee has to take another body, has to go directly to the spiritual world. Only in rare cases does Krishna show his darshan to the devotees who are looking for him. He doesn't have to show himself even to a devotee who has the qualifications. He withholds to make the desire more intense. So that's rare, to see Krishna face to face. That will come, at least that will come when we actually go to the spiritual world, when we attain our spiritual bodies in Vaikuntha or Goloka. For now, we have to be satisfied with seeing the beauty of the Lord in his deity form. And in the descriptions given by the divine words of the Bhagavatam and other shastras. Here, these are just words on a piece of paper, but we can see in our minds the beauty of the Lord. It's invoking an attraction just by hearing the words. If an ordinary man tries to describe the beauty of God, what does a materialist know about the beauty of God? Tell him, I'll pay you 1,000 rupees if you can describe the beauty of God to me. So he'll make an attempt to get the 1,000 rupees, but he can't do a proper job. He doesn't know what God looks like. And what he tells me isn't going to evoke any love of God in me. But when the Bhagavatam, when Kapiladeva and the other speakers of the Bhagavatam are describing the beauty of God, it actually, if we're listening properly, will evoke the darshan of the Lord in our hearts. The Bhagavatam is none different than Krishna, Shri Krishna Parivartita. The Bhagavatam is none different from Krishna. It is the absolute truth in his form of sound. Incarnation is sound. So Krishna and his name are none different. The name of Krishna, if you actually hear it properly, then Krishna will be present. Narada says, Pragaya taksva viryani tirta pada priyashrava ahuta ivameshi gram darshanam yati chetasi. Narada says, when I simply sing the glories, the glorious activities, pastimes of my Lord, then as if I'm calling him, like, the master of the house is calling his servant, come, open the gate. So the servant has to obey. That's his job. So just like a servant being called by his master, Krishna appears to me as soon as I call his name, as soon as I chant his glories. Darshanam yati chetasi. He shows himself to me within my heart as soon as I chant his name. This is Narada's personal experience. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole 18,000 shlokas of it constitute the most potent mantra. You want to have a mantra to meditate on, take this mantra, 18,000 shloka mantra. Recite the Bhagavatam. And when you're done reciting it, start again from the beginning. It's Parayana. And you can meditate on the Supreme Lord. You can worship the Supreme Lord in this form of transcendental sound. And he will appear to you. We should be able to get the darshan of the Lord just by hearing these words, by reciting these words of Lord Kapiladeva. Description of the Lord's beauty. The beauty itself will appear to us if we hear them properly. So, the saintly devotees. We had the word sadhu before. Here's santa, meaning the same thing. Saintly persons. So, we identified who the sadhus were already. They are the Vaishnavas. So these sadhus, they see my charming, ruchira, anga, angani, the limbs of my body, the different beautiful parts of my transcendental body, prasanna, vaktra, my smiling face, happy face, aruna lochanani, and my eyes, which are tinged with the color of the horizon at dawn, pinkish red. Rupani divyani varapadani. I have various forms, various deity forms, various incarnations. The devotees are envisioning these. Each devotee, according to his personal attraction, is looking at some particular form of the Lord. Many different forms, many different devotees. Varapradani. So it's not just a vision. Krishna's not just a cardboard statue like you see the politicians arrange for big statues of themselves on the highways, you know, giving their Diwali greetings. You know, bigger than life, cardboard politicians. Well, they can't, you know, fulfill their promises or do anything for you as a cardboard statue. All they can do is wave at you. But the deity of the Lord is not just a cardboard statue, an advertisement. Vote for me. Varapradani. When the Lord is holding his hand like this, this is his promise of benediction. He's giving benedictions to all his devotees. That's why everybody wants the darshan. They want the blessings. Very potent. The Vastu Shastra says, don't build your house right in front so that your doorway looks right at the deity in the temple. It's too powerful. But the Vaishnavas, they don't care. They're not worried about getting too much darshan. They're constantly in their hearts, even if they're not standing in front of the temple, in front of the deity, in their hearts, they're always seeing the smiling face of the Lord. And he's reciprocating with them. He's not just standing there waving his hand like some politician. He's giving them benedictions. He's actually giving them things. He's actually giving them everything. Ananyas chetanyam tomam yejana pariupasate tesham nityabhi yuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. To those who worship me constantly without deviation, I bring vahami, I carry. Again, like the servant in the house, he brings you your evening milk on a tray, carrying it. He doesn't just say, okay, the milk's downstairs, come and get it. No, he brings it to you on a tray. So Krishna doesn't just send some messenger or some demigod with the blessings. He personally brings it to you on a tray. Vahami. Yoga kshemam. This is a technical term. Yoga means yoga, but here it means acquisition. And kshema means security, like insurance. So, acquisition and assurance. In material life, we're always concerned about getting what we need. Food to eat, money to pay the rent, and so on. So Krishna says here that for his devotees who are always thinking about him, he personally pays the rent. He personally provides everything they need. Everything they need to acquire, Krishna personally delivers it. And then when you have your house fully stocked with everything you need, then you're worried about someone coming and stealing it. Yeah. So you need security. You have to, you know, have a strong lock on the door, bars on the windows, and maybe you have to hire a guard and have a chokey, you know, for him to stand in and watch who's coming near your house. Krishna does that also. Kshemam. I provide the security also. I give them what they need and I preserve it. Personally. So Krishna takes care of his devotees personally. And that's okay. That's so Krishna takes care of my material needs. But is God just our order supplier? In the Bible, Jesus was asked, by his disciples, how should we pray to you? How should we pray to God, to the Father? And he told them a prayer, and one of the lines is, give us this day our daily bread. That's nice, but it's not a full depiction of pure devotion. Is God's business, you know, to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and bake bread for everybody for the morning? You know, transcendental baker? That's not his, I mean, it's not. He's not just our order supplier. So loving devotion goes beyond just how God provides and protects my material needs. That's not loving devotion. That's just like a child demanding from the Father everything. You know, a mature, grown-up child wants to have some loving reciprocation beyond that, not just take, but exchange. So that's described in the last line. Sakam vacham spriyaniyam vadanti. These deities, when a loving devotee comes before them, the deity talks to them. The devotee and the deity exchange all attractive words. It's a beautiful conversation. Advanced devotees also worship the deity. It's not just for neophytes, deity worship. But the advanced devotees have intimate exchanges with their deities. The deities talk to them. The deities can jump off the altar and walk around and shake their hand and dance in front of them. This is the intimate exchanges that advanced devotees have with the Lord. That'll be the next verse. Tire darshaniya vayavair udara vilasa hasekshita vama suktai ritatmano ritapranams cha bhaktir anichito me gatimanvim prayunte. Translation? Upon seeing the charming forms of the Lord, smiling and attractive, and hearing his very pleasing words, the pure devotee almost loses all other consciousness. His senses are freed from all other engagements, and he becomes absorbed in devotional service. Thus, in spite of his unwillingness, he attains liberation without separate endeavor. This is the intensity of pure devotional service. We come to the point that we're practically oblivious of our material life. Just like an intoxicated man. He's walking home. If he's lucky, somehow he reaches home. He doesn't even, not even aware, he doesn't remember how he got home. He just stumbled his way home. Like that, a pure devotee is performing his bodily and material functions by habit. He's not even much aware of what he's doing. Still, the super soul somehow, you know, conducts his affairs for him. Because the devotee is simply obsessed with experiencing the beauty and the attractiveness of the Supreme Lord and reciprocating service with him. So, and then the last point being made here. Thus, in spite of all unwillingness, the devotee doesn't want liberation of any form. Still, he gets it automatically without separate endeavor. Anichito, even for the devotee who doesn't want it, me gatim anvim prayunte, the Lord bestows upon him the supreme transcendental benediction of liberation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expresses the mood of a pure devotee in his Shikshastika. Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhaktir ahoitikitoye. My dear Lord, I don't want wealth. I'm not interested in that. I don't want followers. I don't want the poetic inspiration that could make me a great scholar that would be respected by everyone. But it doesn't mean I have no desires. A devotee is not void, empty of desires. But he has one desire, Actually, one demand. Mama janmani janmani, in my life after life. Of course, that's another I don't want. Let me take birth again and again, I don't care. I don't want even liberation. Let me take birth again and again, but in my repeated births, I must have the opportunity to engage in your pure devotional service. Bhavatad, there must be bhaktir unto you, twayi, ahoituki. And I won't be satisfied with mixed devotional service. It must be pure, unalloyed devotional service. And I demand it. I have to have it. So that's the desirelessness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He doesn't want anything else, but he has to have pure devotional service. He doesn't even care for liberation. But he will not tolerate living without the opportunity to serve Krishna and to serve him in pure love. Okay, one more verse.
Ato vibhutim mama maya vinastham aishvaryam ashtangam anupravittam shriyam bhagavatim vasbhihayanti badram parasya mete shnuvate tu loke.
Thus, because he is completely absorbed in thought of me, the devotee does not desire even the highest benediction obtainable in the upper planetary systems, including Satya Loka. He does not desire the eight material perfections obtained from mystic yoga, nor does he desire to be elevated to the kingdom of God. Yet, even without desiring them, the devotee enjoys, even in this life, all the offered benedictions. So just summing up here, devotees, if they're actually in love of God, if they've actually attained that mature stage of perfection, they don't want anything material, including elevation to heaven, all the opulences available in the material world, including the opulent powers attained by yogis, the mystic powers of yoga. Nor do they even care very much about being allowed to enter the kingdom of God, even entrance into Vaikuntha. They'll accept it, but they're not aspiring very strongly for it. Let me remain in this world and serve Krishna. I'll be satisfied with that. Mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhakti rohoi tukri twayi. Let me take birth again and again, if that's what you want. But I must have your unalloyed devotional service. Okay, so I'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments?
Supreme Lord, yeah. He is accompanying jiva in the form of Paramatma.
Yes.
Always and everywhere. But when the jiva goes back to
the body,
how far Paramatma
is? The Paramatma is only manifest as such, as a separate expansion in the heart of the devotee, four-armed. Only in the material world. There is no Paramatma in Vaikuntha or Goloka. Bhagawan is present everywhere. The devotees see him everywhere in the spiritual world. There's no need to have a special expansion in the heart of Paramatma. So he's not when the devotees cross out beyond the Viraj River, then the Paramatma leaves them. He merges back into Krishna, into the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, Paramatma is the Supreme Lord, but he's only partially manifest. That's it. He's not showing his activities. He's stationary, like a deity form. The deity of Krishna is Krishna. The deity of Narayan is Narayan. That's our faith, that it's not just a representation, not just a statue. The deity is the Lord. But he's not moving. He's stationary. He's not showing, at least to most of us, his pastimes, his activities. Same thing. The super soul in the heart is Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan is Krishna. But he's not showing his activities. He's just standing there. witnessing. That's all he does is witness and sanction and give us intelligence. Matak smitir gyanam apohanam cha. So the Paramatma only does three things. He provides to us remembrance, forgetfulness, and intelligence. He doesn't do anything else. He doesn't play his flute. He doesn't dance with the gopis, not as Paramatma. But he is Krishna. He's just not showing those activities. So there's no real loss when you go to Vaikuntha and the Paramatma doesn't come with you, because he's there in his original form as Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan showing his pastimes, his activities. Okay? Paramatma is just Narayan showing only part of his personality anyway. Okay? Thank you. Anything else? Yes, Mother? Okay, two questions. So I don't know if everybody heard. By practicing devotional service, the subtle body is automatically dissolved. But what about in the process of Ashtanga Yoga, of meditational yoga, which is also practiced by non-devotees? At what stage in that practice does the subtle body dissolve? It's at the end of the process. You have to complete all eight stages. There is samadhi, there is sampragata samadhi, and which one's first? Yes? Okay, savikalpika samadhi and nirvikalpika samadhi. Now, the impersonalists and the Vaishnavas have opposite interpretations of what those two stages of samadhi are. The impersonalists think that full trance in meditation on the personality of Godhead is the inferior preliminary stage, and that the higher samadhi is formless meditation. We say the other way around, that the nirvikalpika samadhi, the higher samadhi, is personal realization of Bhagawan. And realization of Brahman is the inferior form. So only from our interpretation of the Vaishnavas, only in that second half of this phase of samadhi, in other words, the very culmination of Ashtanga practice, when you realize the personality of Godhead, only then can the subtle body be dissolved. Samadhi must be perfected, and the perfection of samadhi requires God realization, not just Brahman realization. Yes. You have to complete the course. Just like you go to the university, there are so many requirements. You have to take the final exam, and then they'll issue a diploma. If you go for so many years, but you fail or refuse to take the final exam, you don't get the degree. You have to complete the entire course. So you have to complete the entire course of Ashtanga Yoga, then the subtle body is dissolved. Then you get your diploma. If you do everything but the very final step, you don't take the final exam, then you don't get the degree. I went to Columbia University. You had to pass a swimming test to graduate. And there were some students with fear of water. They couldn't swim. They couldn't jump into the pool. They didn't graduate. Yeah, they were not allowed to graduate. So all the requirements had to be fulfilled. The complete course has to be finished. And then the subtle body is dissolved. Devotional service, the course is easy and short. You just become attracted to Krishna, subtle body's gone. A person may be still living, but his attachment is gone. He's jivan mukta in the real sense. Like an old coconut. You can shake it and it rattles because the malayas, the pulp inside, has become completely separated. There's no attachment anymore. So, you know, if you break it open, it's, you know, that's the end. So you can reach the stage where your subtle body is already dissolved, even though your gross body is still living out its last days. Jivan Mukta. And all you have to do is die, and you're finished. You're gone. You're back to the spiritual world. You can even experience the spiritual world while you're still living in that the last remnant of the material body. You can realize your spiritual identity even while living in this body, if you attain love of God. Okay? Anything else? Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So last night will be tomorrow, and we're reading up to the end of the chapter, verse 44. Thank you.